From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
If the Republicans continue to take the stand that they've taken, including the Republicans in the Illinois delegation, against support for local governments and state governments, then we're going to have to make drastic cuts. I mean, I've said that many times. You know, we certainly have to deal with the fact that there is a drop-off of revenue as a result of COVID-19 and this pandemic raging across the country and it affecting the revenue that would otherwise come into the state.
So we're running a deficit. We should not have spent at that level that the governor asked for, plain and simple. You don't ask for more spending when you are in an economic downturn. And that is my biggest fault with the governor and how he's handled this, the economics of the state during this crisis.
That's the Illinois House Republican leader Jim Durkin. Comments made during a conversation with the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute. Before that, we heard from Governor J.B. Pritzker. The state's budget is back in focus, and all eyes on Washington to see if Congress will help out states like Illinois. The Pritzker administration is also launching an ad campaign to encourage wearing of face masks to prevent the spread of COVID-19 and possibly now fining businesses who don't enforce the rules. We'll talk about that and more coming up on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Our panel is continuing to practice social distancing from his home. We have Charlie Wheeler. He's an emeritus professor and former director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. He's also a longtime State House reporter and observer. Also with us is Tony Arnold. He covers government and politics for public station WBEZ in Chicago. Tony, thanks for being with us.
Hi, Sean. Thanks for having me.
Also on the panel, we have Peter Hancock. He's a reporter for Capital News Illinois. And Peter, it's good to have you with us as well.
Thanks for having me on, Sean.
Tony, I'm going to go to you first. Illinois, every other state has suffered economically during this crisis. The Pritzker administration has pushed through a new budget for this fiscal year. It relies heavily on borrowing. Explain how they are handling this. What are they doing?
Well, what the budget does is it allows the state to borrow up to $5 billion from the Federal Reserve. That's if it's necessary. I think that what's going on is that is still in limbo. We don't know if the state's going to take that, use that borrowing ability or not, because they're waiting to see what Congress does. And this is really an issue about what's going on in D.C. as much as it is about how the response to this COVID-19 has blown a hole in the state's budget. And so without knowing what Congress is going to do, what they can work out with the White House, those negotiations have been going on and have not come to any kind of deal lately. It's unclear what kind of money there's going to be for the state of Illinois. What the governor has warned is without any kind of support or stimulus, whatever you want to call it, bailout from D.C., then the state and local governments around the state are going to be looking to make cuts and probably layoffs to the very functions of government that are most needed right now, whether it's first responders, public health, unemployment, offices, whatever the case may be.
Peter, you've covered this issue as well, and the governor has, I've noticed a change in his tone over the last few weeks. He really is starting to get out more in the doom and gloom scenario that if Congress does not help out states like Illinois, like Tony had mentioned, there's going to be some serious pain felt around the state.
That's right. And, you know, you might remember during the special session in May when they were debating this, the argument from the Democrats who were in favor of it was that without this borrowing, you're looking at having to cut about 35% across the board in discretionary spending. There are some things that the state simply has to pay. Bond payments are at the top of the list. But if you look at everything else, pension contributions, they were looking at some pretty serious cuts. And the assumption was that Congress was going to pass some kind of aid package and that COVID-19 would sort of bottom out and we would be, you know, climbing into some kind of recovery right now. Well, the pandemic is lasting longer. It doesn't seem to be going away. A lot of states, including Illinois, are seeing another surge in cases. And Congress is locked in partisan gridlock over this aid package. Republican leaders in the Senate are saying they don't want to bail out states like Illinois that were already in bad fiscal shape because of their own mismanagement before the pandemic.
Charlie, we talked about all of this when the budget was approved, and now we've had a little bit more time to digest the plan that was put together. Looking back on it, was it the right approach? Jim Durkin, for example, they're saying that the state should have cut more spending. Your thoughts on that?
Well, it's easy to say, yes, cut spending. And as I've said innumerable times, it's always let's get rid of the wasted management or mismanagement and abuse. But there's not some little guy in the basement of the state house shoveling $100 bills into a furnace. If you look at where the state spends its money, a big chunk of it, now, as Peter mentioned, there's a big chunk that goes for pension payments. Another huge chunk of it is money that the state sends out to local school districts. So are you going to cut there? Probably the next largest or maybe even bigger chunk goes to pay for health care. Do you want to cut that back at the time of a pandemic? So it's not that there are easy choices to be made. And I think rather than impose draconian cuts on really important services like health care and education, the Democratic majority was hoping that Congress would respond. And the Republican leadership in Congress likes to describe the situation as bailing out Democratic-led states that have been mismanaged. But the fact of the matter is the pandemic has hit Republican-led states also. And so it's not just Democratic governors who are asking for help. It's Republican governors. In fact, it's all governors. And you take it down to even a lower level, and local governments are going to be hurting.
Oh, there was a quote
that I saw the other day to the effect that all these people are saying defund the police, protesters, they may get their wish if local governments, who are also being hurt in their revenues by the pandemic, have to reduce budgets. And in many municipalities, police and fire are the largest share of the budget.
Peter, let me talk about Congress for just a minute. We don't do that a ton on this show, but what I keep hearing out of Congress right now is the focus is on that additional payment for unemployment, the $600 a week that people were getting, things of that nature. I really haven't heard a whole lot when it comes to states. Do we know what's being discussed out there at this point when it comes to helping out states?
Yeah, in the House, the Democrats passed a bill, maybe a month or two ago, called the HEROES Act. That was their version. It's about a $3 trillion bill. And it included about $500 billion in aid for state and local governments. The Republicans in the Senate, that just seems to be a non-starter for them. They think, and part of it is trying to hold down the cost of this bill. The federal government has been spending money hand over fist, and there are people getting concerned about the size of this year's deficit. So that's where it kind of stands now. A lot of other issues have come in. Yeah, there's extending the extra $600 a week for people who are unemployed. There is now an issue about funding for the Postal Service, building a new FBI building in Washington, D.C. It's kind of gotten dragged down almost like a Christmas tree falling, collapsing under its own weight. So that's where that stands now. And there really seems to be kind of an ideological split. There are people who still cling to the economics of John Maynard Keynes, who said that these are the kinds of times when governments need to be spending because other people can't. And the government has the ability to keep certain parts of the economy running. And there are others who cling to the idea that you ought to just let the business cycle work itself out. So that's kind of where we are right now.
Tony, what's at stake here for Governor Pritzker? I mean, he is still, I still think of him almost as a new governor. He hasn't been in that long, a little bit over a year and a half. But at the same time, he certainly owns this budget situation right now because of the what took place. Like Charlie said, maybe he was forced to take that type of make that type of decision during the budget discussions. But what really is on the line for him here going forward?
Well, I think that's right. The way that this budget was crafted and passed and ultimately signed by the governor was that we'll wait and see what we get. Well, if Congress doesn't act and Illinois' budget hole is massive, then what's at stake for the governor is overseeing some very substantial cuts, to the... I don't even know how much that would be yet, because the revenue projections have been all over the map ever since the pandemic began. The thing that the governor has warned is that it wouldn't just be first responders or sensitive, government workers who'd be laid off. It's that contracts that the government makes would also be cut. And so there would be private sector losses as well. But what's at stake there would just be some of the most unpopular decisions that anybody in the elected office would have to make just to try to make any kind of semblance of a balanced budget.
Charlie, before we leave this topic, I know that there's, of course, a big referendum that's going to be on the ballot, a constitutional amendment, actually, this November that's would change the way the state taxes income to more of a progressive style instead of the flat tax. Governor's got that. He's writing, a lot writing on this election for him. Is there anything else other than just sitting here waiting and twiddling your thumbs, waiting for Congress to act? Is there anything else that can be done at this point?
I'm not sure that there's anything that could be done immediately that would, save big bucks for the state. There have been some economies put in place in terms of travel, purchases of commodities, that sort of thing. But as I said, so much of it is stuff that you really can't cut back on. For example, are you going to say, okay, we've been spending a lot of money to give the people in our correction system three meals a day. Well, let's just give them two and save a third of the cost of food. You just can't do that kind of stuff. And what people don't realize is that most of the money that the state sends out gets recycled back into the economy. State workers use their salaries to pay stuff like rent, food, clothing for their families. A lot of the services are provided not by state workers, but by contractors hired by the state. A lot of the senior citizen services, for example, are provided by contractors. Some of the child care most of the child care, in fact, is provided by contractors that have a contract with the state to provide these services, and the state pays them. So it's not as though there's this huge pot of money that's just sitting there that people are frittering away. If you make these cuts, it's not just going to be the state that feels the impact. It's also going to be the private sector in terms of those businesses that work with the state to provide services.
You're listening to State Week. I'm Sean Crawford. I'm joined by Charlie Wheeler, Tony Arnold of WBEZ, and Peter Hancock with Capital News Illinois. Tony, on Friday morning, the governor announced emergency rules have been filed that could lead to fines of businesses. There would be a couple of warnings, but could lead to fines eventually if they don't enforce public health guidance like social distancing and wearing a face coverings when somebody is in their establishment. We've been talking about this for quite a while, all the way back to the legislative session back in May. So give us the timeline on what's led to this point.
The timeline is that the governor's been trying to find some way to hold accountable businesses to make sure that people are doing what's needed to stop the spread of, or at least slow the spread of COVID-19, particularly wearing a face mask and limiting gatherings to no more than 50 people. And the governor's tried this a few different ways before. None of them have ultimately passed. He even went so far as to say that the legislature abdicated their responsibility by not taking on a measure like this. And that's because what's on the books right now for the state, the only enforcement mechanism, other than saying pretty please to a business, please make your customers wear masks, is to pull their business license. So if you're a bar or a restaurant, the only way that the state can punish you for not requiring people to wear a mask is to pull your liquor license. That's a really severe problem for a bar if they get their liquor license pulled by the state. It's very time consuming to get that thing back. And not only then, but if you have your liquor license pulled, you're not getting deliveries. So it would just further compound all the problems all these businesses across the state are already having. So what the governor's saying is, give me the ability to fine these places that don't follow the rules. That'll be way less severe than what's on the books right now. But but there's been very little political appetite to enact any kind of a punishment on a business from any elected official, because they don't want to have the appearance of making life harder on organizations or restaurants or anything like that than life already is for them. And so that's all culminated into this announcement on Friday from the governor saying, we're going to try again at this rule. And this would, you know, first is some education, then some warnings, and then ultimately, if the business continues to not comply with making its customers wear face masks, they'll fine them up to $2,500.
Well, Peter, he could have gone after individuals. He could have said, hey, somebody's walking down the street and they're in a crowded environment and they're not wearing a mask. We could, the police could stop them. But he didn't want to go that far, apparently.
Yeah, I think that's an issue. It is not only administratively very difficult procedurally to go around hitting individuals, but also politically very dangerous. As far as the businesses go, though, they do to some extent have a responsibility to make sure that their establishments are safe to be in. But in addition to that rule, he also signed a bill today that extends some protections to frontline workers in the retail industry who are being harassed and harangued if they try to tell a customer to put on a mask. I've started noticing, just when I go to a grocery store or a convenience store here in Springfield, I'm seeing a growing number of people who are not wearing masks in public, and it makes me nervous. So I think this is a way, to get more compliance. We have seen some outbreaks in clusters that are associated with people in bars and people in large public gatherings. I think he's just really trying to send the message that this is serious and people have to wear face coverings if we're ever going to get a handle on this pandemic.
Yeah, Charlie, whether you like the governor or don't like the governor, whether you support masks or not, you can't say he's not been out making this effort to get people to comply. He's been going around the state for weeks and weeks now doing this almost on a daily basis. This was probably the logical step next, was to start saying, hey, we're going to hit somebody in the pocketbook if they don't enforce this.
Yeah, and it's interesting because it doesn't apply just to businesses. It also applies to schools, childcare establishments, and one of the intermediate steps before the fine is the order says that a business that does not voluntarily comply will be given an order to have some or all of their patrons leave the premises as needed. So does that mean that if there's a school where the school district has decided no, COVID is a hoax and so we don't want anybody to wear masks, that the public health authorities will come in and shut down the school? I don't know. But I think what is the motivating factor behind all this is that Illinois was doing very well a month, 6 weeks ago in terms of containing this. And now all the signs are pointing in the wrong direction. Earlier this week, the rolling 7-day average positivity rate was back up to 4%. And we announced roughly 2,000 new cases, the highest since May. So all these indicators have been moving in the wrong direction since we moved to phase four, where there was more ability for people to go to restaurants, bars, things like that. And if you look at the statistics, it's mostly younger people who are driving this. in terms of who's being infected. In the early days, it was older people, particularly people in nursing homes. Now it's younger people, and it's basically, as somebody else mentioned, because they're having these large parties, they're hanging out in bars, they're just kind of ignoring things.
Tony, the governor could have taken another step as well. He could have started to, well, he certainly considered this idea, or at least publicly mentioned it, but he could start rolling back the reopening of the state. He could say bars and restaurants can't be open, or have indoor dining at least, or indoor patrons. He hasn't taken that step either, so this seems to be sort of another warning shot from the governor.
It's a warning shot to businesses across the whole state. Now, you know, there's now 11 regions that the state's divvied up into. Some are doing better or have better numbers right now in terms of the case numbers of COVID, the percent of people getting tested that are coming back positive. Some places are doing better than others. There's 11 counties now across the state. A lot of them are in southern Illinois where the numbers are looking awful. You click into them and you're seeing a very high percentage rate. And you know, I think what the governor's doing is he's trying to put some pressure or at least give some flexibility to local governments to say, you guys decide what's best for your area. I shut the state down. I took all the criticism for that. All I heard during that time was that there should be more local control over what's going on. So he's giving them that freedom now, saying, okay, you guys want that control. You have it now. Get this under control in your area. And still, regardless of that, we're seeing these numbers increase, particularly in, like I said, downstate counties. So that's still out there. And I think we're going to be moving from these threats to some real action here, because these numbers are not going in the right direction pretty much anywhere. It just happens to be that they're going up faster in other parts of the state than Chicago or the suburbs.
Well, even had a congressman from Illinois, a central Illinois congressman, Rodney Davis, a Republican, who announced that he has tested positive. He's now isolating at home. He's, of course, in a heated race with the Democrat Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan. So, again, this is probably going to even be an issue as the campaigns now heat up as we get closer to election time. I wanted to save just a few moments here to also bring up an issue that had come up and has been actually there for months now. But a judge's ruling in central Illinois allowed some prisoners to be transferred into state facilities. Peter, can you fill us in on what the judge said? What was the issue and what the judge's ruling was all about?
Well, early in the pandemic, Governor Pritzker issued an executive order that kind of halted the transfer of people who've been convicted of crimes, transferring them out of county jails into state prisons. He eased up on that a little bit recently. He said that those transfers can occur at the Department of Corrections' own discretion, following safety guidelines. The problem is that the Department of Corrections was not letting very many in. First, they would put them in a holding facility where they would be quarantined for 14 days, and those things filled up pretty quickly. And so the sheriffs, who are generally in charge of running the county jails, sued because they're basically being stuck with the cost of housing state prisoners in their county facilities. And a judge actually said that, this just came out recently, that the Department of Corrections does not have the legal authority to deny, to refuse to accept prisoners that have been committed to the Department of Corrections custody. That is being appealed. And I think right now, a lot of sheriffs are trying to get as many prisoners transferred as they can, as soon as they can, out of concern that an appeals court or the Supreme Court may, put the transfers back on hold again.
And Peter, if that does take place, I mean, I guess we're back to square one here. But the situation right now, as you mentioned, some of them are being transferred. Now, do we know how many, at least as we sit down to record this show?
I don't have a good handle on that, but it is a lot. Safe to say it's in the hundreds, if not thousands.
And Charlie, this is something the governor, of course, as was mentioned, he did this basically out of public health concerns because we have seen the spread of COVID-19 in these prisons.
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, if I'm not mistaken, I saw a story where prisoners from one county arrived at the holding facility, and when a couple of the prisoners from the county jail tested positive, the state refused to accept them, and there was a couple-hour standoff, and finally the sheriff's people drove the prisoners back to the county jail. And the difficulty is, in the confined setting of a prison, COVID-19 would pose a huge health threat. And how do you do the social distancing, and how do you do the isolation when you have people living in cramped quarters like that? So that was a concern on the part of the state. As a matter of fact, there was an outbreak at Stateville up near Joliet early in the pandemic. And at one point, the Cook County Jail had similar problems, and it was identified as one of the hot spots in the nation early on. Now, Sheriff Tom Dart has done an excellent job, and the numbers are way down, and I'm not sure as we speak even if there are any positives at Cook County Jail. And they've been, the ones that were there were isolated, put in quarantine, and the problem was pretty much cleared up.
All right. Time now for our notes from the field. And Tony, let's start with you.
Well, my note from the field is about the ongoing corruption investigation into Illinois state government. And this week, Exelon, the parent company to Commonwealth Edison, the power company around Chicago and suburbs, had an earnings call where they told investors we're sorry about, you know, the bribery that's been going on in Illinois, and giving out jobs to associates of Michael Madigan, the speaker, in exchange for friendly legislation. But ultimately, they still defend that legislation that passed as being good policy. So it's a little bit of a if this then that, but that we swear that that's good stuff for you guys, the customer. And at the same time, they appeared in court and ultimately had to enter a plea as to how the company pleads to these charges of bribery, and they entered a plea of not guilty. Now, what they agreed to with prosecutors is a 3-year agreement to basically behave for 3 years, pay a $200 million fine, and then the prosecution would drop the charges. So they got 3 years to follow the rules here.
Peter?
My note from the field right now is the story that has the biggest hole in it for the time being was the forced ouster of Richard Ingram as executive director of the Illinois Teachers Retirement System. There was just a very brief email press release that went out that said the Board of Trustees had voted unanimously to place him on administrative leave, having to do with performance issues covered by his employment contract. That happened on a Friday. He resigned on a Monday, effective immediately. And we have no idea what's behind that. But TRS is a troubled pension system. It's only about 40% funded. And so when you see a management shakeup like that, just coming out of the blue, it does give cause for concern.
That's all the time we have for State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler, Tony Arnold with WBEZ, and Peter Hancock of Capital News, Illinois. You can get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org or through the NPR One app. Production assistance was provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.